I read a story about a criminal who was standing before court. He was caught and tried, and the crime was thievery. He was caught stealing. And so the judge laid out the court. He laid out the case. He says, here's all the evidence. You are guilty of stealing. What do you have to say? He says, well, Your Honor, I just plead not guilty. And the judge says, well, how so? All this evidence is here before you. He says, I know what it looks like, but it wasn't me who stole those things. It was my arm. I mean, my arm reached through the window, and my arm took the jewelry, and my arm took it out. I didn't really take those things. It was my arm that took it. And the judge just looked at him, and he said, okay, well, I'm going to convict your arm and sentence it to 5 years in prison. Whether or not you accompany your arm is your choice. I love that. I love that. There's a word that screams from that story, and it's the word responsibility. There are some words like that, and they're just pregnant with thought and meaning and understanding. What is all wrapped up in that word responsibility? When we hear it, we might think of obligation. There's things you're obligated to do. You might think of ownership, taking ownership for your life. You might have the idea of priority, setting things in place. But as you see on the screen, maybe the simplest way of defining responsibility is just doing the right thing, even in a difficult place. And I think when we define it that way, it helps us to understand why owning up to our responsibilities is not always the easiest thing. Because sometimes it's hard to feel motivated to do the things we know we ought to do, the things that are the right thing to do, when we're not in the most desirable seasons of life. And that could look like a lot of things. You may be here, and you're in one of those seasons right now. The seasons where we're in it, and there's nothing we can do about it, but we just don't like where we are. So maybe it's the school years. I just can't wait to be done with school. I want to be done with school and out of this season of my life. Or the single years. Or the years without kids. Or then the years with the kids and the diapers and all of that, just wherever you are. Maybe it's the job I'm in, and I just don't like the job I'm in. Or maybe it's just waiting to retirement. Or then once you get to retirement, you're wondering, well, how am I going to deal with all this? We find ourselves in seasons when we just don't feel like we fit. Can't wait to get out of this mess, and into something new. And in Genesis 39, we find a young man who could completely identify with being in a season of life, in a place in life that's far less than desirable. The guy's name was Joseph, 17 years old. He was the father's favorite, and his brothers hated him for it. And so his brothers decided it would be a good idea to just get rid of him. And so they sold him to some traders who took him all the way from home to the land of Egypt, where he was bought as a slave. And so here's this young man, 17 years old, a slave in a foreign country. And think about that. We've got some 17-year-olds here. You imagine you're a slave in someone's house. Your master's over you. If you ever had a lack of motivation to do something that you were told to do, it's when you're 17-year-old and a slave in a place that you were never meant to be. You would imagine if you're reading this, like most 17s perhaps would think today, it's, you know, I just don't care. I don't care. You can tell me what you want me to do, but I'm just not really interested. I'm going to do enough to get by. I don't want to get in trouble, but I'm not going to break my back for you. I'm not going to bend over backwards just for you because I really don't want to be here. But you look at Genesis 39, and that's not what you see. Verse 2 says, the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant. He made him overseer of his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about from that time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned. The Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him, there he did not concern anything with himself except anything but the food in which he ate. Here's a young man, 17 years old, and yet he displayed such integrity, such character, because here's a young man who used his time and his talents and his energy doing what was right. And that is working hard, serving those who are entrusted over you. You might think, well, God was really the one who blessed him. God was the one who brought all this favor. But you look at verse 5 again, and it almost kind of reads like this. It says, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. God is blessing everything that Joseph is doing, but you hear it. God opened the door, Joseph had to walk through. God provided the opportunity, but Joseph still had to work and he had to serve. I think Joseph shows us some things here. In this season of life where here is Joseph and he's far from home and he's in a servant-slave kind of relationship, or even maybe just after, let's catch at least just after for a moment. In the end of Genesis 39, something happens and Joseph is falsely accused of trying to sleep with the master's wife. So he is sentenced and thrown into prison, and it says the same kind of thing in the end of Genesis 39. It says in verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him into jail in the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and there he was in jail. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. The chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. There's our word, responsibility. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. God is opening doors. Joseph is walking through them. He's using the time and opportunities and talents to work, and God is blessing his work. And so there's a few things. Here's Joseph. Doesn't like where he is. You wouldn't think he's happy in a slave relationship. He's not happy far from home. But even in this season of life, you see him demonstrate some amazing principles, like the right character, integrity, that moral compass that guides our steps, that decision-making that helps us see right from wrong. Integrity is easily defined as doing the right thing even when no one else is watching. Even when mom and dad are thousands of miles away from where I am, even when it would be really easy to slack off, the right thing is always the right thing because God's way is always the right way. It was for Joseph. What's dad going to say? What's mom going to say? What's your brother's going to say if he slacks off, if he's a lazy slave, if he's a disobedient servant? Well, that's not Joseph, because he was raised different than that. Even as a slave, even in a place he didn't choose, he's going to do the right thing because the right thing is always right. Because God's way is always right. And so tomorrow morning, Lord willing, if God gives us another day in about 24-ish hours, we're going to be clocking into work. And it's really easy in 2021 for a lot of us to clock in at home. We get to hit the button. We're clocked in, still in my PJs. And so I log in. I've checked into work, but then I can also get over here on Amazon and make sure I'm getting some good deals for the holidays. Or I can check the scores. You know, basketball's getting really hot right now. I can check all the basketball scores. I can be working without actually really doing anything. You know, Paul has something to say about this in Colossians 3. He used it in the language of bondservants, but take it here to 2021 and look at the relationship between and employees, bondservants, workers, employees. Obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service, as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not men. Joseph did. How about you and I? Are we giving the best to our bosses? The best to our businesses? Are we providing an example to our children and our spouses of someone who is simply working hard because it is the right thing to do? Joseph demonstrates the right care of stewardship because, as you saw in the beginning of chapter 39, here Pharaoh is placing not just things, possessions. He's placing his house, he's placing his land, he's placing his servants. Joseph had charge over everything in this master's house. And when you look a little later on in chapter 39, when the master's wife comes and makes this attempt at Joseph in verse 8, in verse 7 it says, she says to him, lie with me. And he says in verse 8, he refused. And he said to his master's wife, behold, with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. And he's put all that he owns in my charge. There's no one greater in this house than I. And he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? Even with his own wife, Joseph displays this amazing sense of care for that which the master owned. And yes, that was his wife. I'm not going to do anything to abuse his property or his servants or even his own wife. Now follow this for a minute. Here's Joseph, he's 17, and he's caring for land and property and country and servants. And he's the one who was in charge, delegating and giving orders. And then Joseph is thrown into prison. Stay with me. I know it's prison, but stay with me. He's in prison, Pharaoh's prison, and yet he's over all the prisoners. He's the one who was in charge, handling and managing all the prisoners that come in and out. So if Joseph can be proven trustworthy to handle land and country and servants, And then you can put him in charge of maybe the worst people you would have in a prison, the most ruthless kind of people. And he could be put in charge to manage, to correct, to lead those kind of men. Can you see how perhaps what he did at 17 and Potiphar's helped mold and shape and build him to the man who could be second in command in Egypt and help preserve a country through a worldwide famine? Do you know how we describe that? If you prove yourself faithful in the little things, you prove yourself to be faithful in the big things. Jesus said that. His master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little, and I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." Stewardship. Every single one of us are stewards of something. God has given us great things in this life, whether if it is just our life or our time or our talents, our families, our kids. God has given us precious cargo that we use and we are navigating through the waters of life together with. And so the question is, what am I doing with what God has entrusted me with? Am I proving faithful even with the small matters of life? Prove yourself faithful in the small, and you prove yourself capable to be faithful with the great. Third thing you see is that you see the right concern of priorities. So that when Joseph is thrown into prison, and he is there before these ruthless prisoners, it says in Genesis chapter 40 and verse 6, when Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. You know why? They're in prison. But there's more than that. They're dejected because they had a dream. Now here's the thing. Stay with it though. Young man, 17, 18, is thrown in the prison. I don't know about you, but if I'm in prison, I want to mind my own business. I don't care why you're dejected. I don't care why you're here. I don't even belong to be here. I should be home with my dad. And so you got issues? I've got issues. I don't want to hear. I don't want to care. But it says in verse 7, he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" There's something here. And maybe we miss it because we move through the story so quickly. There's something here that existed at age 17 in a prison in Egypt that would be fully matured and seen in such a grand and beautiful way just a few chapters later. And it's this amazing heart of compassion for people. He cared even for the broken, the desperate criminals in Egypt. He had enough time to care, some compassion to ask and to listen. You know why that's important? Because if Joseph would take the time to listen to these weary prisoners about the issues in their life and to show them kindness and listen to their issues, and a decade later, when 10 starving men would come asking for food, and he is in a position to crush and punish them, it is that same compassion and kindness and grace that won over the victory of bitterness and revenge. There's something Joseph learned, and I think this time of year, we need to make sure we remember it. Because Joseph, at one season of his life, was over a lot of property and country and money, and then he's thrust into a prison, and he shows us this. You know what the principle is? God gave things to be used and people to be loved. God gave things to be used and people to be loved. And when we get those backwards, life becomes a very dark place. Is it really the time of year when we're buying a lot of things and giving a lot of things, which is a good principle of generosity and giving? But let's not get confused that things were meant to be used to enjoy, to be served as a purpose. But people were meant to be loved, to be cared for, to be served, to be shown kindness. Paul says, "As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, not to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy." Enjoy the things that God gave you. Look in verse 18. "They're to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share the storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is truly life." In other words, what's he saying? You can enjoy what God gave you. Enjoy your money, enjoy your homes, enjoy your toys, whatever it is. But remember, things will never take the place of people in your life. And there's something far more important than the trinkets and the toys and the gifts and the goods that you have from your journey from here to home, and that is the people you meet along the way. God gave things to be used and people to be loved. You know what I think about when I see Joseph in this season of his life? We don't have a lot of it here because Dallas is just flat. In fact, my dad asked me the other day, I was doing some yard work, and he goes, well, what are you going to do with all that brush? I'm like, well, it's going to sit on the side of the road till the truck comes by and picks it up. He goes, why don't you go toss it in the forest? He's like, we're in Dallas. What forest do you think exists in Dallas? We'll talk about it when he comes next week. We got to help him see them. Anyway, there are some places of the country when you're driving, you will see a highway, and right through the middle of the highway, it seems as if they've just cut through a mountain, a hill. And what you'll see on the side of those hills are these trees. You've seen that before. You're driving, and these trees are sticking out of there. And you're thinking, how did that get up there? I mean, I know how it is. You know how it is. Because when you see construction workers, one is working, and the other six are up on the hill, and they're planting trees and flowers and playing Yahtzee. And no, we know how that got up there. Somewhere in some sort of a field, there were seeds that were scattered and fell, and birds or wind picked it up, and it just so happened to fall in just the right spot where there was just enough soil and just enough exposure to sun and to rain, and it grew. Now, there's a phrase we've built out of that. What's the phrase? Bloom where you're planted. Now, maybe this is not where I wanted to be. Maybe this is not where I expected to be. In fact, maybe a lot like these trees, this may be the most adverse and difficult season or place I would ever imagine in my life. And I can choose to wilt. I can choose to get bitter. I can choose to withdraw. I can choose to just waste my life wishing I was somewhere else. Or even here, even in this terrible place, even in this terrible circumstance, even in this unideal situation in life, I can choose to grow. I can choose to serve. Because what I love most about Joseph is that instead of withdrawing, instead of growing bitter, he became something. He became, he grew, he seasoned, he matured into the man we see making amazing spiritual decisions, standing as a second in command in Egypt. He became something. So maybe you're here, and maybe where you are today and your life situation is not where you ever intended you would be, and you really have a choice. And the choice is you can grow bitter, you can withdraw, you can sulk, you can just get a sad song in your head, or you can do something about it. That even here, even in this season, even in this time, even in this place, I'm going to grow, I'm going to serve, I'm going to be active, I'm going to become something, I'm going to learn. And that's really what you see. Let's put it up here on the screen. Three things that come right out of this season, right out of the story of Joseph, right about this idea of growing in difficult places. Let's remember three important truths. One is that who you are is more important than where you are. Don't you see it with Joseph? There he is as a slave in Egypt. There he is as a slave far from the father's house. And you look at the comparison. He's a slave in Egypt. His 10 brothers are off doing whatever it is they want to do. No one can tell them what to do. They're free agents off to go and live their wild and happy lives. But you know what the difference is? One is a slave in Egypt. The 10 are free agents off in their homeland. When God came because his own people, the promise of Abraham was at risk because a famine was entering into the world, who did he choose? Well, I'll tell you what, he didn't knock on Reuben's door. He didn't go to Judah and say, all right, buddy, I'm going to send you to Egypt. He chose the one who was in a position to do something about it. Even as a slave in Egypt, he had more conviction than the 10 free men left at home. Now listen, who you are, and who you become is far more important than where you are. So whether you have a job or not, whether you have a good job or not, whether if work is a good place or not, whether if you're single or married, whether if you have kids or no kids, whether if you have health or your health is really bad, what's most important is who you are, wherever it is you are. Peter said, therefore, beloved, since you are waiting for these things, be diligent to be found, what? In a great place financially, in a great place relationally, in an ideal place economically. No, he says to be found with him where? In him, spiritually, in Jesus, without any spot, without any blemish, and at peace. That no matter where it is I am in this life, maybe I never even thought I'd be here. Maybe this is not how I saw my life turning out. This is not the way I saw things turning out. You know what? Maybe not. But what's more important than wherever it is you are is who you are in that season. Be found by Jesus wherever it is you are, living a life that's pleasing and honoring to him. Second truth is what you do is more important than what you have. And again, this time of year gets us confused because we tend to equate worth and self-worth with what it is we have. Net worth and self-worth get confused this time of year. And we think we're valuable because of the things we own. We think we're special because of how nice the things we have. And yet in just about an hour and a half, we're going to be standing right here. And at least for 1 hour, we're going to remind each other why it is that we are valuable, not just in and of itself in life, but why we're valuable to our God, because he gave the most precious and important thing that exists for you and for me. You were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold. You weren't bought by that. You weren't redeemed from your futile way of life by silver or gold, not by your employee or not by your title, not by your pedigree, not by your family name, not by your heritage. What redeemed you? What's more important than any of that? The precious blood as of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. Never forget that. There's a reason we eat that and we drink that. You're more important than that to God. You're more important than your work to God. You're more important than your degree to God. You're more important than your family name and your heritage. You're more important than how much you have in the bank because he gave the most important thing that exists for you, for me. And maybe the greater question is not necessarily what it is that I have, but what am I doing with what I have? Oh, there's so many ways we could trace this. What am I doing with this new life I have in Jesus? What am I doing with the grace, the second chances that God has breathed into my life? Even the material things, what am I doing with the talents, with the blessings, with the health, with the riches, with all that God has brought into my life? You know, it's really easy to have the heart of 1 John 3 and verse 17. Notice the contrast. 1 John 3:17, if anyone has the world's goods, God has blessed him, he has it, and he sees his brother in need, and yet, look at it, he closes his heart against him. How does God's love abide in him? Now, notice the contrast. Here, John says, you've got what someone needs, God has blessed it in your life, and then here's an open door, here's an opportunity, and you say, no way, it's mine. God gave it to me. But maybe contrast would be in Deuteronomy 15:11, for the poor will never cease to be from the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, to your needy. So that's a good question, isn't it? When I look at those two verses, I can't answer it for you, but you need to answer it to yourself. When you look at all the things that God has given to you, your time, your talents, your wealth, your opportunities, that will look like 1 John and everything's, it's mine. Or do I look like the heart of Deuteronomy? The very illustration of Matthew 22 and verse 39 of something that's opened up wide. If I can help, if I can bless, if I can encourage, it's yours. I think, but I don't have a whole lot. I don't have a whole lot to share. I don't have a whole lot to offer. I don't have a whole lot to give. And yet the amazing thing is that Jesus says even a cup of cold water makes a big difference in heaven. It's a little acts of kindness, a small acts of service make a big difference to our God. So what you do with what you have is more important than the things themselves. And then we need to end here, and that is where you're going is more important than where you've been. It's more important. And that is the question I'm going to ask you today, is that is where are you going? Where are you heading? I don't mean after services. I mean, where are you going in life? Where are you heading? Where is your life heading? Where are you going towards? I think a lot of us rely on where we've been. And that could be two sides of it, isn't it? There could be in the past that we have been in a good place. I served the Lord in my past. I was zealous in the past. I really read the Bible in my past. I was active in the church in my past. And yet you and I know that where it is I have been is not necessarily where I am today. That's the whole heart of Revelation chapter 2. That there's a church in Ephesus that at one time was good with their first love. was kind and compassionate and gracious, and yet he says, you're not there now. You need to remember from where you've fallen and go back and do what you used to do. So here's the thing. If I'm relying on who I used to be, but it's not who I am today, it's more important where you're going than where you've been. Hear it again? Maybe I've been something that I'm not now, and I need to go back and do some things I used to do. I can't ride the coat trails of the past. I need to make sure I'm just as active and present in the future. But there's another side to that, that maybe in the past I've not been who it is I ought to be. In fact, behind me is a trail, a stain of broken promises, a rebellion, choices that would just dishonor my God and others. And yet what's far more important than where it is I've been is where it is I'm going. I don't have to end there. My story doesn't have to end that way. I can make a change. I can make a change in my life. I can make a change in my direction. I can come to Jesus this very day. And even if behind me is a lot of darkness and a lot of evil, my future can be safe and secure if I've given, if I've obeyed, if I've trusted and given my life to Jesus. So maybe the way of saying this is that responsibility is doing what is right everywhere and every time. And there's a reason we kind of shy away from this. You ever have a child, one of your kids, and they ask for a pet, and you say, oh, listen, I know they look really cute. I know in the TV shows it always looks ideal, but that's a lot of responsibility caring for a pet. They say, no, we got this, we got this. And so moms and dads say, okay, but if we buy this pet, then it's your responsibility. And they say, yeah, we've got it, we know it. And so you bring home the pet, and the first week goes all right, and then week two forward, it is mom and dad's responsibility. Why? Because kids realize something, that's a lot of weight. That's heavy. I mean, the life of that pet rests in the hands of those little kids. And they realize this is a lot of work. This is too much for us to handle. And yet, what do moms and dads say? It's just a pet. It's just an animal. Because you and I understand something a little heavier than that, don't we? That while it's okay for us to take care of animals and we need to do so well, you and I, moms and dads, are entrusted with the life, with the souls of our children. That's our responsibility. And that's heavy. Who they are, who they become, the kind of person they mold into in a large sense, that's on us. And it requires us doing what is right. Right for our children, right in the eyes of God all the time. What's it look like, brethren, if I said, take responsibility for your kids. Take responsibility for your spouse. Take responsibility for your life, for who it is you are and who you become. That's weighty. That's heavy. And yet, in a grand sense, who it is we are, who it is we become, where it is we go in this life, well, by God's grace, we will make it home, and by God's strength, we make it through. You and I get to choose the path in which we trod. So I want to leave it this way. Maybe you saw the question at the bottom of your note card. I love basketball. I think I've told you all that a lot of times. And one thing you'll see a lot in basketball, the defense is on, they're guarding the ball, and someone gets the ball, and they go on a fast break down to their basket. But three defenders get there before him, and so it's a 1-on-3. You would think the odds are three defenders versus one offense, they're going to stop the play. Or at least they're going to slow them down and make things have to get back into a rhythm. But more times than not, you'll have three defenders, one offensive player, and that offensive player still goes up, and he gets the ball in the hoop. And then you know what follows? The defense does something like this. And you know what they're saying? I thought you had him. I thought you had him. Well, I thought you had him. I thought you had him. No, I thought you had him. So here's the question. Who's got it? Who's got it? We all assume someone else has it. Who's really got it? You know, we have a lot of kids here, a lot of young people. They should be getting together. They should be. They need to be together. They need to be studying and having devos. But I'm sure someone's got that. I'm sure someone's got it. Someone else is going to take care of it. Who's got it? Who's got it? you know, I feel like there's a gap here. We have some members, and maybe they're not getting the time and attention that they should, but I know someone's going to take care of that. Someone, I'm sure, has an idea and a plan. Who's got it? Who's got it? Someone probably should be talking to the kids at night. I'm sure my mate's got that. I'm really tired. I've had a long day. I know my mate's going to be taking care of that. Who's got it? Who's got it? Because you know, brother, we do that long enough. There's a lot of important things that never get done. Maybe instead of assuming someone else has it, what if you and I just said, I've got it. I've got it. With whatever it is I can do. Maybe I can't do it completely. Maybe I need to pull in some help. But instead of saying, I'm sure someone else has got it, I see the need. I've got it. I've got it. We have some older women here, some widows. I wonder, has anyone taken them out to lunch for a while? Just called them, taking care of them? I'm sure someone will. I will. I will. We got some young people. They probably need to be together. Come to my house, or I'm going to take them out to In-N-Out. They love In-N-Out. We're going to do In-N-Out. I've got it. I've got that. I've got that. We got some visitors with us today. Well, I'm sure someone's going to talk to them. Someone's going to be kind to them. Yep, I am. I've got that. I've got it today. I've got it. That's what responsibility is. Responsibility is ownership, taking ownership. There's a need. There's an open door. God has given me what it is I have that I can contribute, and so I'm stepping through. God blessed the Egyptians. But the reason they were blessed is because Joseph walked through the door that God opened. He was responsible. Brethren, there's a lot of things you and I can do. Let's not assume someone else has it. Let's just step up. Let's volunteer. Let's do what it is we can. Let's be responsible.